Maybe a simpler way to phrase this, Bob, is we've had time now. We're the beneficiaries of a little bit of reflection time. How bad was that loss? I thought it was horrendous myself. Born of horrendous decision-making, an offense that couldn't finish and a defense that couldn't finish in a game that should have been won against a crappy team. I'm not taking that back. I thought it was a horrendous loss, honestly.
Yeah, I did too, because the fact that there was so much on the line for them, that's why I thought they'd have a different response on a Thursday night. Knowing there was some extra days off afterwards, you build up a little insurance in your record of 9-2. Gives you a little bit of more breathing room against this gauntlet of games. And instead, they came out a little flat and allowed that, when Cleveland got involved in the game, then you knew it was going to be a game. But they just got their butts handed to them in New Orleans, 35-14. They got outplayed, out-schemed, and then 3 days later, they come and kind of do the same to the Steelers. It didn't look good, and so it was a very bad loss.
Let's go to our decisions segment, Bob. I know this is your favorite. You and I and Limits will weigh in on key decisions from the game. Let's start in the first half with one of the very first ones. It's 3rd and 3 at the Cleveland 32. Nice little drive they had. Beautiful drive, I thought. And then Russ takes a sack. That can't happen, but then the decision, 4th and 11 from the Cleveland 40. He goes for a 58-yard field goal. Even in those conditions, I'd be a hypocrite if I said that I don't like punting, or if I didn't say I hate punting from the other team's 40 and I love Boz. Give him a shot. I didn't have a problem with this one. You?
I didn't have a big problem with it. No, my thought was after the sack, and it was Myles Garrett who got around Dan Moore and Isaac Seumalo on that play. That's a big loss. It was essentially a 10-yard difference in terms of the field goal. So 58 in those conditions with the wind howling was a little risky. I thought he was going to punt it down, trap them in, inside their own 20, let their defense go to work. That's what I thought, but that's not a decision that I was irate over for sure.
I wasn't mad about it. I mean, Boswell in those types of situations has been really good. It is surprising that I think Tomlin let him kick that with the elements being what they were before it ended up snowing and not in a dome in Indy earlier this year, which could have potentially been a difference maker. Not that big of a problem with it, but I also would have punted.
Man, punting from the other team's 40. I guess maybe you take a delay a game and give your guy a little more room. I don't know. I hate that.
Yeah,
no,
but if you pin him deep.
Why not give Boswell? You don't have confidence he can kick a 58-yarder anywhere?
It was just
I
the wind. Right before then, they showed the wind on the flag up above. It was really not an easy wind. And you saw the direction of that ball as soon as he hit it. It went veer right.
Right with the wind.
Yeah. So that's the only thing I would say about that. If it was not as windy, I would have done it. Because it was, I would have tried to pin them in their own 10-yard line if I could and make things a little difficult for them.
All right, decision number two. It's a 0-0 game. You're at 4th and 2 at the Cleveland 38, and Justin Fields comes in, and he is stopped. That was the one where the play clock ran down,
Yeah, it correct? Was just like haphazard, it looked
haphazard.
Like to me.
It wasn't well rehearsed. He should have called timeout. God knows he was wasting timeouts in the second half. Why not use a timeout when it's actually completely warranted? We don't look organized. The play clock's running down, and the play looked like crap. The decision itself to go for it, I'm all for, but it's combined with a decision not to call timeout, Bob.
Yeah, I thought timeout was prudent there. That's one of those situations you saw the clock ticking down, and you say to yourself, all right, this is 4th and 2, and if you're not careful, it'll become 4th and 7 and change your mind. You have a chance with him in here to get a first down. They rushed to get the playoff. It looked like the blocking scheme was to the left. He went to the right. There was confusion.
Yeah. Bread, what do you think?
Bread.
Mm. What?
I
don't even know who you are anymore.
Bread?
I
had Wonder Twins on my mind. I've already gone
What's
Twin Cities.
What's that guy's
Cities.
Name? Fred Savage?
Yeah.
Is that his name?
I've gone Twin Cities. I've gone everything. And then Wonder, I thought.
He does
Bread.
Have a first name.
Yeah.
It's Austin.
Carol. Go ahead, Bread. What did you think of going forward on 4th and 2?
I thought that it was just not good in terms of how rushed it was. And Tomlin, I mean, we're going to talk a lot more about his timeout usage. That would have probably been a good one. But Justin Fields also did not read the play well enough. If he would have cut back to the left, there was an open lane there.
Right, that's what I thought.
So, I mean, I was okay with the decision to go for it on fourth down, but Fields just didn't execute. He did not.
Yeah, I'm all aboard with the decision, too. But, yes, just come on. A lot of this game was on Tomlin's mismanaging of the game. And, therefore, he gets most of the blame. All right, the next one.
But I will say that did not result in anything because they got the ball back and, you know, they shanked a punt.
Yeah, I know. I know. But the next one was 4th and 1 at their own 46, losing 10-3 early in the third quarter. He goes for it again, and this time Jaylen Warren gets blown up. What'd you make of that decision?
Yeah, I don't know. That one is, again, one of those in-between decisions for me. I wasn't lukewarm about any. I thought you could have done a lot of things there. The blocking scheme on that was not good. I thought the offensive line had their issues in that game. And once that became apparent, I wouldn't have trusted play calling in that situation. I probably would have kicked it.
I would have kicked it too.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you expect mistakes to be part of this game. They won the turnover battle, Joe, but because, you know, they got those late, it didn't necessarily, you know, they could have created something early in the game, taken the lead,
I like
and forced
being aggressive
that team.
Here. I like being aggressive, and you know what? I wouldn't have minded using Justin Fields again. I like being aggressive there. And if Justin Fields isn't, was he in the game at that point, or did Russ just hand to Warren? I can't remember.
Russell handed off to Warren, who was also standing about 8 yards back from the line of scrimmage, where the Browns on the same play gave it to Nick Chubb, lined up as a fullback, and they picked it up with ease.
I don't mind going for it there. I have to tell
you. Well, did you like
the
play call then?
You're trying to take advantage of a turnover. You just got a fumble. And you're trying to score. You're trying to win. You're trying to be aggressive. You're there to win. You're not living in your fears, Bob. Did I like the play? Yeah. I don't hate the play call. It's Jaylen Warren. I have confidence in him.
But I agree what he just said, Austin, is that when you line a guy, it's like fourth and short.
Why not the tush push? Not the tush push with Fields?
Even Fields under center, you can do things there as opposed to standing him 5 yards behind the 1 yard you need.
Didn't Russ get stopped last week on a quarterback sneak?
Yeah, but he's not the best at that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They didn't do the tush push right there. How complicated is that? Have your 230-pound quarterback Fields line up under center with Najee behind him. And push him behind one of the top 5 centers in football. Come on. This can't be that complicated.
Yeah, the success rate on those plays is very, very high.
I don't like how they're getting stopped on all these short yardage plays. All right, the next decision. Mike Tomlin, for some reason, calls a timeout before a 4th and 1 play at the Cleveland 22, which I guess you can defend in the end because they got it. They got it on a pass to Freiermuth, and they wind up with a field goal. But, Bob, that's a squandering of a timeout, too. I guess I'm 50-50 on that because I just blamed him.
Right. You just said earlier, and if there's confusion or whatever.
Was there confusion
here? I don't know. I don't remember specifically on that play. I do remember the 4th and 2. It seemed like they had a long time trying to figure out what they were going to do, and then they rushed the play. I don't think that was the case there. But I would have taken a timeout there. I didn't have a problem with that usage of timeout. Those are critical downs, and that's okay.
Yeah, I agree. I really didn't have a problem with it. Also, being in the first half with a chance to go in and score points when you desperately needed it.
No, it was in the second half.
Oh, you're talking
We're into the second half now. Yeah, he squandered one of his 3 timeouts in the second half to call timeout before a 4th and 1 play on which there didn't appear to be confusion. I don't know, man. I guess generally the operation needs to be a little bit smoother than what it looked like. One time the play clock's running down. We don't call timeout. We don't get it. And then another time it's 4th and 1. And just to make sure of everything, we call timeout. And then you're left with 2. And that brings us to the next decision, which was a big decision, which was do you want to make them be 3rd and 2 or 3rd and 7 or 4th and 2, Bob? And then somehow in the midst of this, Tomlin calls a timeout that they desperately needed at the end. Why did he call time out there?
Here's the thing. To me, they had plenty of time because there was confusion about the call. The officials huddled up. There was time to figure out what you were doing as they were trying to figure out what they were going to call. I thought it was a grounding play. I think that was because you knew it didn't get back to the line of scrimmage, but because it hit that offensive lineman, I guess they ruled it illegal touching, which saved them.
No, they ruled it right. That's why they ruled it illegal touching. I thought they actually explained it well on the broadcast why they didn't call grounding, because he got hit in the middle of his motion, was their ruling.
Yeah, but you got to get the ball back to the line of scrimmage.
Well, not if you get hit like that. Like, if you imagine him getting hit, didn't happen.
Whatever. Whatever. The case was, you asked about the timeout. I thought there was plenty of time to hash out what you were going to do. They originally said they were going to decline the penalty, then accept the penalty, then decline the penalty. They went back and forth like three different times. And so they ended up taking a 3rd and 7. Here's the choice there, Joe. I would have forced them to go 4th and 2. I wanted to see. They had one play at that point. By giving them another down, if they were thinking four-mindedness, you know, they were going to go for it on 4th regardless, you gave them an extra down. So you gave them 2 chances to get the 7 yards
and
as opposed to 1.
And you're desperate for time.
Now, there was a shot they may kick a field goal. It was, you know, tough conditions, probably not, but it was 43 yards. If they had done that, you would have had plenty of time to come back and get your own with Boswell. So I would have preferred my personal preference is take the 4th and 2 and see what you got.
This was a disaster because you squandered a timeout. You lost time, precious time in the game, and they wound up converting. I mean, the whole thing was a disaster. Here's why. You basically said it, why I forced them into 4th and 2. You call their bluff on a field. You want to try a 43-yard field goal? Go ahead. Then we still have 2 timeouts and plenty of time to come down and win the game. So go ahead and take a field goal. Or, all right, you're going to go for it 4th and 2? That's the ball game then. Either get it or you don't. We call our defense. Then if you want to call, would you call timeout there maybe to set your defense? I don't know. That's a story for a different time. But I would have called them their bluff on all of that. And I bet you Cleveland would have called timeout right then.
See, that's the other thing. You would have forced them maybe to take one of their timeouts. So
the whole thing just blew up in their faces. And as you notice, as we're going along with all these decisions, they're all occurring on 4th down plays. Indecision. Wasting of timeouts. Not converting. The other team is converting. The game really came down to a series of 4th down decisions in a lot of ways.
Unusually more than you would see in a game. You know, the fact that they went 4 for 4 on 4th down and 1 for 10 on 3rd down is mind-boggling to me. You never see that kind of a stat.
So now you're down to 1 timeout. Wonder Twin thinks they should have let Chubb score on 1st and goal from the 9. Do you agree?
I would not have had a problem with that if they did it, knowing that you're down with your timeouts. You have to score at some point. You assume they're going to score. Once they played that up straight up, then I thought, okay, now you got to stop them. Because now you let too much time run away, and then he scores anyway, which put the pressure on them to come down and get a touchdown. So if it's early in that possession, I would have done it. Since it wasn't, and they were playing straight up, then I would have tried to do
what
they did.
But what are you stopping them for? They're just going to kick a field goal at the end of the game then.
Well, maybe or maybe not. I mean, it depends on how you – I don't know. That's always a hard one for me. There are a lot of people who thought Chubb should have just slid at the 1 yard line.
He should have.
Again, you're taking the chance. Dustin Hopkins missed 3.
I disagree with that. I do disagree with that because of the conditions. You take the touchdown, you make them.
Yeah, because and you're forcing them to score a touchdown all the way down. And who knows what's going to happen? He missed 3 field goals last week. One of them was only 31 yards. This would have been a similar.
But I do agree with Brad that they should have let Chubb score on
maybe.
First down.
I mean, if you do that, fine. You'll get the ball back, but you got to go.
I don't like bread. It's good to eat, but not to be called.
All right, we'll skip bread.
Yeah.
We'll go back to Twin Cities.
I feel like if you, or just Austin, my name, if you score on 1st down, you save an extra 30 seconds or so. And if you're Chubb, you could slide at the 1 yard line. And the success that they had running the football in the second half, they could have just waited another play, ran it in, or set up wherever you want for Hopkins. Even a 19-yard field goal with the ball at the 1 yard line right down the middle. I mean, unless you're Blair Walsh, you're not going to miss it.
Bob,
remember that one, Bob? Remember that Blair Walsh?
These are all strategic things that are called, and I wouldn't have a problem if they had done it, but that puts the pressure on them to go down and score then. And if you're going to do that, let him go early, save time, because you need the time without as many timeouts as you would have liked to have had, and then try your shot, yes. But, you know, they chose not to do that. So I could have seen it. I would have played it straight up and forced them to take a field goal, and I still think there would have been time left to get one of your own. It wouldn't have been a lot of time, but all you need is a few yards compared to a touchdown in that situation.
All right. And then I guess we're left with the whole, this is not a decision. Well, I guess it is. Of what happened with George Pickens, now that we've had some days to digest this, what happened on that Hail Mary?
Did you see the one angle from the person in the stands?
What did it show?
I'll show it to you. It shows George Pickens with a stranglehold over Newsom's head.
Yeah.
Taking him out of the end zone. I don't think they knew where they were because you couldn't tell where the end zone ended.
What was he doing? I mean,
I don't know. Did
Newsom run him out of the end zone or no?
I'm going to show you this play and you tell me what you think when we go to a break.
It seems clear from what Mike Williams said that the play was to have one jump ball guy and three guys standing there, so which is fine.
But normally on that sort of situation, you have to anticipate that the ball's going to be batted forwards as they try to knock it down. You should have someone standing at the goal line also, just in case that happened. There was nobody around the ball, the Browns players.
Well, but everybody was mad that nobody jumped. It seems clear to me that Pickens was supposed to be the jump ball guy, which makes sense. And then the other three guys are waiting for the if too many of the Browns players jump, then you get a commander's play where it just falls right into your lap. He said that was the play. One guy was on a jump ball. Obviously, that guy was Pickens, who by that time was fighting people in the stands practically.
Again, though, if you look at it, and people made it sound like Newsom was driving him away into the end zone, but it looked to me like the other way. Like it was.
Well,
both
if it was the
them.
Other way, then it was selfish of him to do that.
Well, I'll show you what I saw, and you tell me what you thought. It's difficult to tell because, again, it was all snowy. You couldn't tell footing, what was going on. There was a lot of contact. And we had people call us and say, why wasn't there pass interference? When was the last time you saw a pass interference called on a Hail Mary? They just don't call
it. It's not going to happen.
Right? Unless you tackle a guy or something really blatant, you're not going to call that. It's a jump ball situation.
But it didn't seem like one Steeler receiver knew where the football was.
Well, that's what I mean.
Pat Freiermuth had his back to the ball.
They were waiting for a tip. Those guys were grounded for a reason. I guess you have to adjust. Do you notice that Pickens is running past you toward the crowd? And can you adjust to that or do you stick with the play? Like if you're told you're grounded, in other words, you're waiting for the tip. That's the whole play. It seems to me that if Pickens was focused on running Newsom out of the end zone, was like ticked off, that was unbelievably selfish. If it was Newsom running him out of the end zone, Then it should have been a penalty.
Well, they're not going to call penalties on that play, regardless. They're just not. I don't remember the last time there was one called.
Could I bring up one more decision that no one's talking about?
Please limit.
The two-point play? A fade ball to Cordero Patterson.
Yeah,
really?
I don't like that. I didn't like the personnel grouping.
I agree with you.
Yeah, that just didn't make a lot of sense.
It's a completely different game if you get that two-point conversion. You defend it completely differently. And, I mean, Mike Tomlin probably makes it fourth and two.
I completely agree with you there.
And Cleveland, I would think, kicks the field goal, ties the game.
Although that should have been a penalty. That was blatant in the end zone. Blatant. Would you agree with that?
There were a lot of those calls. I mean, you can make those kind of claims throughout the course of the game. There was a holding on Nick Herbig on the Winston touchdown.
I mean,
they didn't call that, but that was right in front of the guy. I thought if he was going to call it, he could have called it because he was clearly being held, but they didn't call it.
You know, at the start of the season, I thought that Artie Smith was a little bit too obsessed with getting Cordero, his guy, involved in the offense, and then Cordero made some plays. The Indy game, 6 carries for 43 yards on a day he got hurt. But by and large, he's done nothing, and he doesn't look good in doing nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's going to come a time. Is he hurt? If he's hurt, then don't have him out there. He just doesn't look effective at all, Bob, whether it's kick returns or anything else. Would you agree?
Yes. Before I forget this, you mentioned Pickens a lot. What about his post-game comments? Let's get into that next.
It's a wonderful question that I was going to get into. And then the top of the hour, we're going to talk a little hockey and Pitt football and two coaches who are...
Wow.
Man, I would think on somewhat of hot seats. I think almost any coach in the history of the NHL would have been fired by now after two disappointing seasons and this.
And then you pair that against what you saw from Boston and what they did now.
Let's talk about that, Bob.
Totally opposite opinions.
Well, George Pickens has a way of becoming a story, doesn't he? Wildly talented, makes plays, helps them win games, and also winds up in headlines for different reasons, Bob. After the game, I just thought his comments were a little bit ridiculous, didn't you? About how the conditions and everything else. Can we hear some of that? Limits, I never had a chance to weigh in on this. Bob and I can riff for a minute. This was Pickens after the game.
Let's start with how the elements played a factor.
It's supposed to be, you know, like it was a backpiling type play. The snow was, you know, the conditions were so bad. I don't even think, you know, the QB could see sometimes. And, you know, when you got conditions like that, it kind of at the opponent's home field, it kind of play in their favor.
That's an excuse. Both teams have it.
How did it play, play in their favor?
It doesn't play in anyone's favor. It's the same. When I hear that, I'm like, why are you? No. What favor?
That was one thing said after the game. And then Newsom said fake tough guy of Pickens. I actually like this kind of thing. Don't get me wrong. This is good. This is good stuff. Was it Dan Moore who said you can't lose a game to a team like that? Something like that. Let me look it up so I don't completely misquote him here. They can't deny, Batko writes, that the Browns brought the energy this game. Definitely, especially with us letting them hang around for as long as we did. It gives a team like that confidence. That's something we have to learn to not do. I don't know, man. If I'm Dan Moore, I think I'm the last guy talking about that.
After that game.
You were facing the monster, and the monster got you. There's really no shame in that. But to sort of cast it afterward as, oh, yeah, we let them hang around, and you can't do that with a team like that. That defense was better than you the other night.
That seems to go against everything that Mike Tomlin tries to preach about, the respect for other, you know, your team. Anybody can win in this league. He spends a lot of time at Tuesday press conferences talking about the opposition, regardless of who they are. And then you hear the players talking about that angle of it. It doesn't seem to add up.
And then how about Myles Garrett after the game? And I'll listen, I've been very critical. I've been critical of Myles Garrett in his career. I think to a certain degree, he's a front runner. When things are going great, he piles up numbers, not so much when they need him real badly. And also, I don't respect the way he handled the Mason Rudolph thing. I thought that was...
No, he should have been suspended for an entire year.
Really horrible. I'm not talking about swinging the helmet, obviously. You know, you don't want that. I'm talking about issuing an apology the next day and then coming back and claiming that Rudolph made a racist remark, which Mike Tomlin vehemently said was not the case. And I'll always go with Tomlin on that situation. Why would you issue an apology to Rudolph if you're Myles Garrett in that situation? I just don't respect the way that he handled that at all. However, in this game, he talked the talk and then he backed it up, and he was the best player on the field. And I actually like that there's something brewing, and I wish TJ would pipe back. I do. I wish he would snap up into the conversation here. TJ, very guarded to never say anything wrong, except he did come out on social media. Remember when Garrett won the award? So say it. Back it up.
Yeah.
Let's go. I'm the guy. Because now Garrett's saying it. I'm number one. I'm the guy that runs through me. There's no other person being defended as I am, or schemed or played against as I am. If you're TJ, come back. Or don't go on social media when he wins the award and basically say something like, you know, passive aggressively, I'm used to it. You want to talk and snap back and say you're the guy, then say it. You want to play the role of, I don't talk like that, I don't do stuff like that, then do that. Be one or the other. I say, for him.
Yeah, I think there's a time and a place to respond. In this case, it looked like TJ threw the first salvo there with his reaction to that choice. And I honestly thought TJ Watt should have won it.
So do I.
I don't think there's any question that he was the better player last year. The numbers speak volumes for it. But Myles Garrett chirped up, and he didn't like it. Now he chirped up again. I'd come back and say, we'll find out. You know, I wouldn't do it in a way that'd be passive-aggressive.
I like this.
I would just say, well, I mean, that's his opinion. I'll tell you what my opinion is. I think I'm better than him, and I'm going to show you what I can do
like
the rest
that.
Of the way.
I like it,
and
Bob.
It's not like
it makes for good copy.
It's
here.
Not like you're the one producing it on your own.
No.
He said what he said, and I'm going to say what I said. Great player. I have a lot of respect for him. But guess what? I'm better. But I don't think it'll ever come to that. I don't think Watt plays that game.
Except on social media when Garrett
wins
the award.
Well, social media, so.
So I'm hoping that TJ comes back and destroys them.
By the way,
he got handled one-on-one a fair amount the other night from my eye test. You?
Yeah, but there's also a lot of double teaming and chipping and people in the second level helping out over there. I think it's hard for him. And there are games, believe me, if you watch enough, Myles Garrett has a lot of those kind of stat lines because he's been
the numbers
doubled.
Show that he gets doubled, I think, more than anybody but Trey Hendrickson in the league.
Yeah, Hendrickson, by the way, we're not talking about him, but he's terrific for Cincinnati. But my point is, there's a lot of double teaming going on, and numbers can be misleading based on that. I think it does scheme for your team when you have somebody like a Garrett or a Watt. Other guys are going to get opportunities because of the attention that those guys get, and that's where you have to come up with the plays if you're other guys.
You also got to come up with the plays if you're those guys.
They do, but you're not going to do it every game.
For my money, TJ's come up less than in recent years.
Well, his pressure rate, if you look at the metrics, is down significantly from the last 2 years. It's at 8%, whereas last year I think it was 14%, and the year before that was 16%.
I mean, that's just what the eye test tells me. He's still been really good, but I'm used to TJ Watt when he's on the field being
Superman.
You're
a victim of your own success. When you have so much of it, people expect it every single time you play, and it's just not going to happen that way.
And I don't consider that, like, you know, again, it feels like sacrilege to say stuff like that, but the games and the numbers speak for themselves, and it's not ripping him. It's just saying I think he's been – I think it's a little bit of a down year to his standards so far. And he still finds a way to make some plays at the end of the game, like the Commanders game.
Right.
When he was basically shut out, he still got blatantly held in the end zone, should have been a safety. And then he did knock the ball. He had a huge deflection after that. Mm-hmm. I'm just used to TJ completely wrecking things, you know, for long stretches of time. And it's been a little less of that this year. It almost doesn't feel like a criticism. It just feels like a fact.
Right. It's not a criticism. It's the way it goes sometimes. You're not going to have those games every single game, especially when you're getting the kind of attention that he's getting. But he does find ways to make plays at critical times.
But it is a criticism, I guess, because in the end, I expect more of him for the money he makes and what he does for this defense.
If you're expecting that, then I would expect more from Minkah Fitzpatrick, given how much he's being paid.
Minkah Fitzpatrick is a flat-out disappointment.
I wonder how much of this is schematically based. If they feel like, and they seem to think, that he's doing a good job back there in that center field position, the problem with the center field position is you don't get a lot of action over there sometimes, and it's hard to make plays. He's a playmaker.
Is he doing a good job in the center field position?
I don't have a metrics in front of me. I mean, the numbers show that he's not making big plays, but maybe he's not being required to make big plays. They're not throwing the ball in his area a lot. I do know that. You know, he don't get throws down the middle of the field. He has to go and...
I don't know. He's given up a lot.
He has, but I'm saying, where is he more effective? Where would you like to see him play?
Here's the thing. I thought moving him to center field creates more of an opportunity for him to make plays. Ed Reed played center field.
If they throw it in that
direction.
Find
a way to make plays, Bob. I don't think they're ignoring him the whole game. This isn't Darrell Revis in college.
But I do think they do tend to shy away, largely. I think I'd like to see him move around more. I'd like to see him at the line of scrimmage once in a while and then drop back. I'd like to see different things from them.
Me too. But in center field, you're supposed to be a playmaker. You know, that's why you're playing center field, to be a playmaker.
Yeah, but
we're going to find out. I know that.
Oh, we're going to find out this Sunday.
We're going to find out coming up with some of the guys on this schedule, more than Jameis Winston or even Jaden Daniels, I would think. Starting this Sunday. So let's see a big play. I mean, I don't care how they're scheming him. When we start to talk in terms of years between interceptions, and splash plays, problematic. Yeah. When you say, hopefully, one of these years, Minkah will make a splash play, I don't care if they're putting him at punter. He's got to make a splash play, Bob.
Yeah, and I think Deshaun Elliott's done very well opposite him when he's in there. He's making plays. So we'll see. Still big games left, big plays that are to be made.